Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening for this Sunday afternoon in the time change time. Is everyone happy? We're glad to have you with us as we get on with the show. We hope everyone set their clocks back an hour last night or at 2 o'clock this morning. And as we move forward, we hope that, you know, you have a great week. But as we get into the show today, I want to start the show off with some panel. Most of the panel is online, but I think for men, we need to hear some comments from somebody that might be able to give us some, but I want to say one of our panelists, Mr. Don Wiggins, had his anniversary, his 43rd anniversary during the week, and we want to say congratulations. But I'd like to start off, Don, by first of all congratulating you and say, you know, that's wonderful. But what would you say to a young man who's just about to get married? I know we've had this conversation before, but things change over time. What would you say today to a young man that's getting married to help you say this is what you need to do in your marriage? What would that be?
Wow. Thank you so much, David. I appreciate you, man. Well, let me say this. First of all, find your friend and then your lover, and when you find that special one, know that in all thy getting, get an understanding, and then don't give no more than you can take. Ooh, that's special there. Don't give no more than you can take.
Can you broaden that up? Tell us what you mean by that, Don.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you want to give something, you got to be able to take the same thing that you just gave.
Oh, I get it.
Don't give no more than you can take. So if you give it, just know you got to be able to take it.
That sounds a little selfish to me, Donald.
Oh, wow. Well, it worked all these years.
Well, hey, I can't argue with you about that.
Other than that, we met in high school, and we have a wonderful relationship. I have a wonderful wife, and she makes it easy for me to do what I do because I do a lot. See a lot of people, talk to a lot of people, and I just know that I got somebody in my corner.
Hey, Don, congratulations, first of all. I'm curious, because I think you and I are about the same age, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all are, except for a couple of guys, but how do you feel about meeting somebody online? I mean, do you think it works better when, like in your case, you met in high school and you were friends first and, you know, because nowadays so many relationships start online and then I don't even know that they last as long. I mean, I don't have any statistics, but what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that's a very good question, man. You know, back then we didn't have access to online. You had to meet them in person or introduced by a friend or meet them in another environment that you're in. We didn't have that opportunity, but now online is an added advantage because you get a chance to meet them online, check them out online, they can send a representative too online and not the real person. That's the danger part of it. A lot of people like to send the representative instead of the real person. Online is different. And, you know, I thought about that. But, man, I tell you, it's good. It's good to meet a person online. That way you can talk to them. But I would say this, if you meet them online, make sure you see them in person, too. Because you want to feel that spirit. You want to be around them close up and not just online because, man, like I said, you can send a representative online.
All right. I do know that I went to a wedding for Darius in the last couple of years, so I know that he's new in a marriage. Darius, what are your thoughts on this conversation? What would you tell a young man that wants to get married and getting married, the thing that you think will help make their marriage more successful? We want to talk about the other side, flip side of that in a minute, but let's talk about the success at this point.
Well, first of all, congratulations, Don. I'm so happy for you, brother. I'm glad to hear that, man. It's unlike you, this is my second one, so I'm glad that you got it right the first time. I think for me, you know, the biggest thing is two words, and that's yes, ma'am.
Whoa.
Once I learned that, everything was a whole lot easier. But, I'm just joking. No, I think the most important thing is, like Don said, you know, the first thing you have to do is you have to find your friend. And honesty is number one, openness and honesty. So I have to say openness, too, because a lot of people are honest, but you know, they hold a lot of things underneath their sleeves. You know, they don't reveal a lot of things. And so if you have openness and honesty and you can be totally transparent with someone, knowing that this person will love you unconditionally and will not hold any judgment against you or bring something back up again, and you both can move forward in the effort to both be better, and you find someone that makes you want to be better than what you are now and helps you to be better, I think those are very essential to a lasting relationship.
All right. That's very interesting. But can you broaden the phrase, and I've heard this several times, but people are ask a lot about what this means, love you unconditionally. Define that.
Well, it's, and I'm glad you said that, David. That's a very good question because a lot of people think that means you can do whatever you want to do and the person is just supposed to accept it. When you become vulnerable to someone and you give your heart to someone, that's a very, very serious obligation and responsibility on the part of the person who's receiving that because you're entrusting that person with your heart. So if I say, David, I love you unconditionally and I'll do anything for you, I'm trusting that you're not going to say, okay, Darius, go with me to rob this bank. Or, okay, Darius, come with me to sell drugs. But unconditional love is the type of love where we both are committed to doing, to helping each other become better. When we're both committed to being better together and enhancing our lives, enriching our lives together. And you're trusting that if I slip, if I drop the ball, not if I deliberately just do whatever I want, but if I slip, if I drop the ball in some way, and I'm willing to own that, and I'm coming to you saying, I did this, I'm sorry, that you're still going to love me. And not only are you going to stay with me and love me, but you're not going to treat me any differently because I dropped the ball once or because I made that mistake. That, to me, defines unconditional love. Yes, sir.
Does that apply in your mind to an extramarital affair if you slip up or she slips up and has an extramarital affair? Is that something that is forgivable?
It is forgivable in some situations. I can't think of a situation in my life right now where I'd be forgiven. But I'm sure there are – I don't like to say across the board, you know, for everything, because there are some situations where you get one spouse who's sick and the other one that just gets weak or somebody, you know, there's a lot of turmoil and stress going on in the relationship, and some people turn outward. That's not something I would forgive someone for, because to me, you know, for better or for worse, healthy or poor, I mean, rich or poor. So in my situation, my circumstance, I don't think that's a forgivable thing, because at that point, you've broken the covenant. Now, can it be repaired? Absolutely. But once you break covenant, then I think that unconditional love thing is kind of out of the window, because you're not showing unconditional love at that point.
You know, one of the things in present day is Don has been married 43 years. For most of us, 43 years is what we reach for. That is our goal, to be have that kind of a relationship. But the young guys, the new guys, they can't think. They don't think like that anymore. And I know that, I hope you don't mind, Michael, but I know I'm going to put you on the spot here, because Michael is thinking about getting married very soon, very quick. What about this conversation makes you think?
Well, thanks for calling on me, David. And yes, actually, my girlfriend of 5 years, I recently proposed to her, and she said yes. So I am getting married in June. So, and to hear my man Don Wiggins, Don, first shout out to you, man. I saw your post on Facebook, and you have a beautiful wife. You guys make a beautiful couple. And I hope I can have that type of longevity with my future wife. As a man, I'm been single my entire life, Derek. This will be my first one. I'm not as lucky as you to have had that many women love me. But this will be my first one, and I'm an older guy now, so I'm a little nervous that I waited so long to do it. And the loneliness did start to set in, I'm going to be honest with you. The older I got, the more lonely I felt, and I felt I need a companion, I need a partner in life. So I just hope and pray that I have the success Don Wiggins has, and I'm just going to go at it, like Darius said, burying the hatches. I mean, over 5 years, he and I have had a lot of problems. There was infidelity in the relationship. But like Darius said, you got to just bury the hatch. You got to never look back at the problems you had and try to stay focused on the positive. So that's the strategy I'm going to take. And like I said, I hope to be successful like you, Brother Don.
Hey, Michael, can I add something?
Yes,
go ahead, Bruce.
Sure, Bruce, go ahead.
I was married for 30 years and then ended up in divorce. To this day, I don't know why, and that was 20 years ago. But I got over that. But what my long marriage taught me, and I think contributed to at least going that long, was don't keep score, Michael. If you truly love somebody, as Darius said, and Don's experienced as well, unconditional love, you don't keep score, meaning if you want to do something for your new bride or your very established wife because you either want to help her grow or you want to show appreciation or for whatever reason, and it's just a statement in and of itself. Don't think now, what's she going to do for me? Or, I've done 3 good things. Now, when's she going to do the first one? Do not do that. Because if you truly love someone, it doesn't matter how many times you reciprocate or she reciprocates back to you. You grow together and you both benefit and get better in that marriage by just helping each other without thinking about keeping score.
Okay, thank you for that advice, Bruce. I do appreciate that.
You know, the term for that is you want to get into an agape love. Agape means unconditional. I love you just because. It's not a situation where I love you and I did that for you. Now what you going to do for me? You can't get into a situation like that. It's got to be agape love. I love you just because, and that's it.
That's right.
All right. So my understanding from reading in different books that there are several reasons that people find marriage difficult, and the number one reason it seems to keep popping up is financial. So would you say, Ron, that finances is one of the main things that people who are getting married now should be, and why, how should they look at it? How should they look at finances in a marriage?
Well, Ron, what do you think? Yeah, I think the sad truth of the matter is that finances do play a big part sometimes in couples splitting up, unfortunately. But, you know, if you're struggling financially, that puts a lot of strain on everything in your relationship. And people end up fighting over the smallest of things, you know. So, yes, I do think economic hardship definitely plays a role in relationships deteriorating.
Let me ask Don, since you were married for 43 years, what would you say is the one thing a man should keep an eye on to not let it get misconstrued by his partner? Is finances or jealousy, or what is the one thing that you would say a young man, you shouldn't let that, you should try to work that out? What would it be?
Well, the finances are very touchy issue. Most marriages have difficulties in the financial area once the finances are upside down and turbulent. It kind of hurts the communication level. Money is a changer. The word says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil." Not money is the root of all evil, but for the love of it. And that's something that you got to really work on. Don't let the finances destroy you. Now, jealousy is another area that you mentioned, David. And you can control that, I don't think, because, man, women, they want to know that you are theirs. You know, the same thing that you get that you did to get her, you got to continue to do that to keep her. I mean, I'm doing things now that I did when I was younger, and we celebrate our anniversary on Friday, but man, I had a good time. I wasn't able to do what I was doing back then, but man, I came close.
Can I add something on the other end of the scale?
Sure.
Yes.
Money for my wife and I, it had its sharp point here and there, but I can honestly say without hesitation, finances were never a divisive issue for us at all. For, I think, a couple of main reasons. One, everything we had was ours. I never had, she never had a separate bank account that was hers and mine was mine. We had our bank account just like we have our children and our family. And we agreed early on, I knew quickly and she knew quickly that both of us were pretty responsible people, so I wasn't worried about her going off the deep end or vice versa. And if there was any significant purchases to be made, we'd sit down, talk about it, and decide how and when and what. So money, even when we were first married and had almost nothing between us, was never a huge stressful point for us because of the way we handled it together. I know a lot of people got to have their own accounts and this and that, but we just never did that, and I'm glad we didn't.
Hey, Bruce, now that you bring up money and bank accounts and all that, I'm wondering how the panel members feel about prenups. Do you think it's a good idea? Do you, I mean, Do you think it's horrible to do those, or what are your thoughts on that?
Are you asking me?
Well, yeah. Or whoever
just, the panel in general, and I'll pipe in later.
I can comment on that. Many times I thought about prenup, and a lot of my friends have decided to go that way, prenup, because of the money. But 2 weeks ago, my wife and I sat down and we put together our will, and we did a living will and trust, because so many times my relatives would leave Earth without taking care of those important things like a will, living trust, and it would end up in probate court, and the lawyers would make all the money. We got to stop that. We got to stop leaving our decisions when we leave Earth to other people. That's very important. Very important, men. Make sure you sit down, put a will together. A prenup only involves money. And I don't think that that should be a factor, because if you love someone, money is not the issue. You know, you can get money. Money is an answer. That's all it is. It's nothing but an answer. And all that getting, get an understanding. Keep the understanding right, and you won't have to worry about the money.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is if you have a really, really rich person who's getting married, you know, if I think the rich person might always be questioning whether the partner is really in love or after the money. I mean, I think that would be horrible, but it exists.
All right, Michael, what are your thoughts on prenup?
I'm definitely all for prenup. I think that's a good idea, especially in this time and this age and this generation that we're living in. And in regards to the finances and prenup, it's just a different world. I wish I would have gotten married back when my brother Don got married or years ago when things were different. But in this financial society, we're driven by money. We just are. And I say that because me and my future wife are looking to buy property. I think property ownership is something very important in a marriage as well. And what we're looking to pay for our property is way higher than I'm sure what Don was looking to pay for his property 46 years ago when he got married. So the financial aspect of the relationship, it's a lot. It's tough. I'm going to be totally honest with you, because there's this whole saying, no romance without finance. And, I mean, that's
but
true as it was back then as it's true today. Go ahead, Ron.
Let me play devil's advocate, and let's say your fiance is very rich, right? And she said, mm-hmm. Hey, Michael, you know, I'll marry you, but I need you to sign this prenup, you know, because this money is mine. It was mine before we got married. You wouldn't have an issue with that?
No, I would have no issue with that. If it was hers, it's hers. I don't want any of her money at all. No, if I married Oprah Winfrey tomorrow, I would sign a prenup and marry Oprah Winfrey. I wouldn't want any of Oprah's money. Now, I should be strong enough and man enough to use the resources of saying, hey, I'm Oprah's husband, to generate my own money. So if I marry a rich woman, I don't want her money. I should be able to use the resources of being her husband to make my own money.
All right. I just want to jump in with a little bit. I'm thinking because Soel came in, and I know that Soel wasn't here last week with us because somebody got background. There's a lot of noise on the microphone on the set. Anyway, Soel wasn't with us last week.
It's usually Bruce. Just kidding, Bruce.
No, it's Michael. He's on the beach.
Sound like seagulls, didn't it?
Hey, David.
Okay, I'll mute the phone. It was me. I am out on the beach. I'll mute the phone.
I hear Jaws music in the background. I hear Jaws music.
Oh, wow. Anyway, guys, I just wanted to welcome Soel back, because the reason Soel wasn't with us last Sunday was he had got inoculated for COVID, and it kind of made him sick. So I just wanted to say welcome back, Soil. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm surviving amongst the living.
So you got over, you don't feel any more of the afterwards of the inoculations?
No, I still feel groggy a little bit, but it's not as bad as it was because right after I got the vaccine, I slept the whole day away.
Okay. Which one did you get, Pfizer, Moderna? Which one?
It was the Pfizer.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to the panel. I mean, there are other things. The conversation we had last week on fathers and sons and all of that, there was a lot of feedback during the week from emails and that. And what was really surprising to me is a lot of women thought that that was wrong. But then when I write back and say, well, what about if it was a mother and daughter? They said, oh, well, that's supposed to be like that. Women should love their daughters, but fathers and sons is a whole different thing. So in my mind, that made me think, what are women looking at men as so different, like we're all pedophiles or something? It's a strong part for men, when in reality, it's like 50-50 across the board. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that, but I want to throw that out to the panel and what's your thoughts? Darius, what are your thoughts on that?
As far as women looking at us as being pedophiles,
yeah,
as
they don't think that men should love their sons as women should love their daughters, is what I'm getting.
I got you. Okay.
Wow.
I agree that there should be a different type of love between mothers and daughters and fathers and sons, because as fathers, we're raising our sons to become men and to become leaders and to become heads of households. So the type of love that a father shows his son is more of a tough love that teaches responsibility, that teaches morals, that teaches work ethic, that teaches manhood, because this world is a lot tougher for men than it is for women, and this world expects a lot more from men. There's a totally different set of standards for men. So it should be different, and there is a different type of parenting when it comes to a father and son and a mother and a daughter, when the mother's more of a nurturer than a father is.
So what you just said was, if a father has a daughter and a son, he needs to treat the son rough and mean and the daughter with love and respect. So you're saying that a father should treat his kid differently? That's what you just said.
Hey, mic check 1, 2. Is this thing on? Because I don't know if I said that.
It sounded like what you said to me. But you said fathers treat their son tough love, but they shouldn't. Then you're saying that if I have a son and a daughter, I get to pet my daughter, but I got to send my son out and give him and beat his head. What are you saying?
No. No, not at all. I'm saying that with a son, you have to train him up to become a man. And it doesn't mean I hug my sons. I tell them I love them. You know what I'm saying? I kiss them on their cheek up until they're probably like maybe 15 or whatever. I'll kiss them now on his cheek, you know, if he wouldn't get totally embarrassed by it. But no, I love my sons and I show love. But at the same time, when they fall, my empathy is shortened and my sympathies are shortened, because you got to get back up. I'm not going to allow my son to wallow in his mistake or in his misery, and I'm not going to allow him to quit, and I'm not going to allow him to make up excuses for failure. And I'm teaching him that because that's what the world is going to do to him once he becomes a man. And so, yeah, while my time of nurturing with my daughters may be a little bit more, it may be longer, I'm going to teach them the same lessons, but the method and the manner in which I go about it is going to be totally different. And I have to be sterner with my son than I will be with my daughters.
So there's two sets of standards a father must have for his daughter and son.
In my opinion,
they're not
because
equal.
There are two sets of standards in the world for men and women.
I respectfully disagree.
Yeah. Go ahead on.
I respect you. I agree.
Wait a minute. Okay. Bruce, I think it was first.
Yeah. Here's why I say respectful and disagree. My dad was one of the biggest men, had hands like vices, could have put you through a wall if he wanted to with one hand. He never did. He wasn't physical with us. But he taught me when he and I would go out on the road from time to time on his business trip. And that was the way he taught me life's lessons and how to be a man. He was, Darius, tough and firm but fair. And we as children bristle at that. But he also had a side of him when it was just the two of us that was very nurturing and very understanding. Like he would say, sometimes the person that appears to be the weakest is the strongest. And then he would explain why. Because you don't have to always look like you're the winner or you get all the credit or something like that. So I can't believe that standards only have to be, you got to be tough and so forth. It's the delivery system. The delivery system can be the way you said, but in the background, my father taught me how to be sympathetic, empathetic, nurturing to some degree. As you say, I agree with that. But not to be, you know, get out of my face, don't touch me, be a man, be a boy, blah, blah, blah. No, he taught me both sides, and I'm much better for it.
Hey, Bruce, I don't think we disagree at all.
Yes.
I agree totally with what you said. I didn't say no sympathy, no nurturing. I said it's a different delivery system. It's a different style, and I'm not going to nurture my son as much or as long or as empathetic as I will be. But does that mean I don't display any empathy? Does that mean I don't ever tell him I love him? And so I hug my son almost every day, even if he doesn't want me to. You know,
we agree on that. No, I didn't mean to imply you didn't at all. I agree with your statement that guys, the smart men that are raising their children, male, have a delivery system that works for their family. Absolutely, I agree with that.
All right, somebody got radio or something on in there. They're making a lot of noise, but I think Michael jumped in and wanted to say something. Michael, was that you trying to say something a few minutes ago?
Yeah, definitely. Twofold. First, I agree with Darius, and there's two totally separate rules in life for men and women, absolutely. So, yes, you should definitely nurture them in separate ways. But last week, Darius came on the call late, and I really wanted to hear his answer to a question, but he came on the call late. Darius, the question last week was, if you had a 16-year-old son, is it okay for him to lay with his head in your chest? Because there was a photograph of a young 16-year-old boy laying with his head in the chest of his father. And I was one of the only ones on the panel that said, no, I disagree with that. I don't want my 16-year-old son, if he's got a problem or he's going through something, to come lay his head on my chest and we talk about it. I would prefer him to stand up and look me in the eye as a man and talk about it. But I was the odd man out in that one, Darius. So I want to hear your take on that one. Would you let your 16-year-old son you laying down and he's laying on you with his head in your chest like he's still a little baby?
Okay, so I agree and disagree. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier about empathy and nurturing. So if that's my daughter and she needs to lay her head on my chest, she can lay her head on my chest and cry in my arms as long as she needs to. If it's my son and he's going through something really, really tough, lay your head on my chest, come here, I'm going to give you a hug, and then you, after that, you got to get up. And you're going to get up quick. It's not going to be long. You have to get up. You're going to have to tighten up. Get up, right. Get up. Pull your pants up, you know what I'm saying, and suck up that snot, dry your eyes, bro. Let's get out here. We got to get.
That's how I felt about it, Darius, but I was the odd man out with that one.
No, I agree with you on that. You got a limited amount of time to lay your head on my chest as my son, especially 16. You got a very
well,
short
the other,
right
Darius, there. The other part that was added to that, and Michael is right, he was the odd man out last week, is the rest of us said, you got to understand, and you touched on it a little bit, you got to understand the circumstances on which your son, whatever age he is coming to you and why he is. And you touched on that. So I think in different ways we're kind of all in agreement. But your rapido kicking off one's head from one's chest was a little different.
I think what the picture actually was the father asleep and the son fell asleep on his son on his the son fell asleep on his father's chest. So they were sleeping. They weren't just like hugging or doing all that kind of thing. He just kind of fell asleep,
right.
Which is a whole different picture.
Now, Darius, what is your take on that? Because I said absolutely positively not to that. My son is definitely not taking a nap with his head on my lap. What is your thought on that one, Darius?
I have to agree with you, Michael. You're not taking a nap on my chest, son. Not at 16. But what I will say on the more serious side is there's a deeper issue there. Because if a man, and he's a young man at 16, if he needs to lay on his dad's chest, there's something serious going on with that young man, and his father needs to find out what it is. He's like, hey, son, get up off of my chest. Pick yourself up. Now let's talk. Let's have a conversation. Because obviously something's wrong if you need to do this.
Right. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, Darius.
All right. Let me ask Soel, what are your thoughts? You weren't here for the conversation last week, but we made comments on there was a picture of a gentleman sleeping on a sofa, and his 15-year-old son was laying his head on his father's chest, and he had went to sleep also. And there were thoughts back and forth about would that be allowed, is that good or bad? What are your thoughts, Soel?
First of all, it just depends, in my opinion. Like, let's say we're on a plane and we're up against each other and you're in the middle seat, I'm in the window seat, and there's some stranger, like, yeah, I would rather you be next to me than some stranger. That's something. If your girlfriend broke up with you, okay, I understand you're sad. Okay, if you lost your job, I understand. But, okay, I'm going to be here for a little while. For a little while. I need to go back out there, do what you need to do, you know, find another job, find another girlfriend, and then just keep on moseying it down. And when you were talking about love for your daughters and your son, I do agree partially with what people were saying, but, like, when it comes to daughters, as fathers, it's your job to protect your daughter's virtue. And as a son, I mean, you want your son to be strong and not be mentally weak compared to other men. So if I was a father, those would be my standards for daughters and sons. I would love my children equally. And when it comes to my son, yeah, if you're emotionally sad, like, come to me, I'll help you out, but you need to go back out there and stand on your feet. I can't be here for you forever.
Wouldn't it be the same thing for the daughter? If she came to you with sad stuff, she needs to go out there and handle it. You wouldn't have the same, wouldn't be the same?
Yeah, if your boyfriend broke up with you, if you lost your job, if something happened to you, I will be here for you, but I can't be here for you forever. One day I will be gone, and you need to do stuff yourself and just go back out there and do it. I'll be here for you for a little while, but then you need to stand up on your 2 feet and go back out there and do it.
You're saying for
both,
right?
I agree
right?
with you a lot.
Who was that? Michael?
Yeah. I'm sorry to cut in on that. But, yeah, I, like I said, guys, David, I raised a daughter. And when my daughter was little, when she was like 5, 6, 7, I always put in her head, hey, I'm your boyfriend. I'm your first boyfriend. So that same rule still applies now that my daughter's an adult. I'm her first boyfriend, meaning she can always come to me crying with a problem. Like, if there's something going on, she wants a hug. She can lay her head on my chest forever. So it's just a different set of rules for girls and boys. If I had a son and when he was 5 or 6, I'm not going to tell him, hey, I'm your boyfriend. I'm not going to tell him that. So I think the rules are different.
No, but the mother might tell the son that. But still, let's think about this mental issue here that you're putting in your daughter's mind. You're her first boyfriend, and she's like 5 or 6 years old. Interesting conversation there. Don, what do you think?
Hey, David, repeat the question again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it was just that Michael was saying that for his young daughter, he would tell her that he was her first boyfriend. Is that Michael? Is that really on the beach? Noise that I'm hearing? What is that? What is that?
I'm muted again, but there's no noise around me, but I'll mute.
Okay. I'm sorry, Don. Michael was saying he would tell his daughter that he was her first boyfriend, and I'm saying, isn't that putting mental issues there? That something, because I know that a lot of women, when they get older, compare their boyfriends to their father. They want them to be like my father. And I see a lot of, as I grew up, I've seen a lot of women who say that, and it just, to me, the issue is that you're trying to make this person to be somebody else. And how does a woman really make that work? I don't know. So what are your thoughts?
Well, David, you know, it's true. Women do seem to cling to imitators of their father. Their father is their first image of a man relationship. And I think when you have daughters, you have to understand that she's looking at you and the same traits that you have, nine times out of ten, she will gravitate towards a man that's like that. I have two daughters, and, man, both of them, I can see, man, I had a good time on mentoring them, and they got some qualities that I like because they got some parameters that they will not accept because I had a chance to sow into their life and talk to them and mentor them as young ladies and what to expect in a man. You got a lot of young men today that got it twisted. They think the women's supposed to take care of them. And I don't believe that. I think the man should always be the leader, take care of the woman. And even when you marry her, her name changes, which means that you just bought that country.
Mm. All right, Bruce, what are your thoughts?
I don't know about hostile takeovers and buying countries, but I do agree with what Don and several others said, that the thing, just listening to everybody and even myself, in some ways we're still stuck on the old stereotypes. Man, tough. Woman, nurturing, mild, all of that. And I exaggerate a little, but in some ways, the lady you said at the beginning that said, oh, that's just wrong to see son's head on a dad's chest for any reason. That's stereotypic reaction. And I've just always been one that feels, especially as things changing now, and many people wanting the fathers to be more nurturing, to be more involved with their kids than maybe they used to be, that's not a good way to bolster that opinion if you turn around and in too many ways say, well, yeah, but you can't do it that way, and you can't do it that way, and you can't do it that way. I mean, we have to allow both. We're letting women be stronger role models in the workplace and so forth, and they should be. They control most of what we do. But men can be more active in the nurturing role too, and other than something we know is severely not proper, we should allow that to happen. And we still have a lot of stereotypes that not only hold us back ourselves, but make other people very judgmental about the action.
All right. Well, I think we've done a lot of this conversation for today. I want to move on to the panelists to ask Darius, what would you like to talk to the panel about this week?
I guess since we've already done social issues, you know, I can maybe bring up politics. And I was wanting to discuss what happened in Virginia and New Jersey this week, where we saw that, you know, the Republicans kind of made a very, very strong push for conservative issues this week. And I hear a lot of people on the left are saying, this is racist, it's racist dog whistles and things of that sort. But I totally disagree with it. And I think what's happened is Democrats have turned regular Americans who aren't conservatives or Republicans, but are conservative in values. And that's where I think a lot of Democrats have made the error is what they don't realize is just because a lot of people vote Democrats, the vast majority of this country is still conservative. And I think they pushed the envelope a little bit too far. And some of the moderate Democrats, conservative Democrats, pulled back. And they say race, but this is the same state that voted for Barack Obama twice. And this state just recently elected its very first black lieutenant governor and Hispanic statewide office as well. I can't remember which one it was. But I find it amazing that nobody's celebrating that on the left, because we love to say first black this, first black that, but nobody's celebrating that. So I guess I want to hear from the panel what their thoughts are on this past election. What do you guys think are the indicators of this, if there are any at all, for the future?
Michael, what are your thoughts?
Well, first, let me say I hear you, Darius, on the black the lieutenant governor. She was a Republican, and yeah, she's not getting her cool or her props, and she should definitely be getting her props for that. But because she's a Republican, she's not. So I do agree with you on that. We should celebrate that. But in regards to what happened in Virginia, let me just start there. The governor's race, Terry McCullough, a number one, was a horrible candidate. He's a Democrat that lost. He was too moderate, he was too in the middle. The guy who was victorious, I can't think of his name. He was a far right Trump kind of attitude Republican. He was far right. And like I always say, the country is so divided right now. You're either far right or you're far left. You can't run a moderate against someone on the far right, and you can't run a moderate against someone on the far left. So that's what I think happened in Virginia. Darius, I disagree with you. I think we're more of a liberal state. I think we're more left, center left than center right, because for the last two presidential elections, the left has got far more votes. The popular vote always went to Barack Obama. It went to Hillary Clinton. The popular vote always goes to the Democratic Party. So we're a center-left country. We're not a conservative country anymore. We were a conservative country for hundreds of years, but we're a progressive country moving in that direction now. So I disagree with you on that one, Darius. But as far as and last but not least, as far as what happened in New Jersey, yeah, that was kind of scary because New Jersey is a blue state, and the Republicans almost took that. It came down to the wire. Why? I just think the Democrats aren't motivated right now to get out and vote, because as a Democrat, we're not happy with what the governing party is doing right now. We're not happy with Biden. We're not happy with Kamala Harris. We're not happy, so we're not motivated to get out there and vote. So that's what happened in Virginia, and that's what happened in New Jersey.
All right. Don, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you, Michael. It's more of a liberal country now than conservative. I think it's moving more towards a liberal country. However, I'm happy with the current administration and what they have had to deal with. They had to do a lot of repair work and also a lot of moving forward. This country will never be the same, because we've gone through 10 years of change in this country. I like the sense of taking care of us opposed to other countries. We need to focus at home right now, and I like that. I like the sense of take care of your own house and stop throwing rocks and bridges at other people's window. Take care of our country. We got some serious issues here, and we need to repair them. We used to be a leader in every category, and I don't think that's happening right now. So I like what's happening. We're moving towards a level where we're centering around the United States and our country and our family. So I say let's stay focused and let's help each other, because we need to focus on our leadership ability.
All right. So El, what are your thoughts?
Well, I was looking at the news, and I was really surprised what happened and not surprised at the same time. First, let me just say, when governors run for governor of Virginia, they can only run once. That's it. And then they have to wait 4 years to run again. And the last time someone won the last time was 1974. So most Virginia governors do not get second terms. And Terry McAuliffe, yeah, he was a good candidate in retrospect, like he was the former governor of Virginia, but he's a Clinton-backed Democrat. They literally had all types of people campaign for him, and he is the embodiment of the Democrat establishment machine, and having Joe Biden there really did not help, especially as the polls were closing in on Virginia, and that made it possible for Glenn Youngkin to win. And it doesn't help that you're slandering your opponent so badly that political fact is like, oh, that's wrong. What he said was wrong. That's not true. And even CNN is actually backing up what the guy was saying. Yeah, Terry McAuliffe lied. So that is why I think Glenn Youngkin won. What happened in New Jersey, though, was really surprising, because a Democratic governor has not won re-election in 44 years there. And Phil Murphy is not really popular, from what I understand, and during the debates he got booed a lot, so it's not really surprising how close the vote came.
Wow. All right. Darius, we got that, but Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think Youngkin did not focus on the national picture, as and I've heard that on the major networks as well as Fox. As I told you, I always scan them all, and because of that, he went right to the issues that matter to the people in Virginia. And if you want to simplify the victory, that's the way to do it. He listened to the people, what they really felt they needed, what they needed help with. They didn't want to hear excuses, and as Sowell said, bashing the other candidate and making it a national issue. That doesn't solve their problems at the gas pump, on the food line, in the COVID situation, and all of that. And I think he very smartly made it local and made it personal. And as a result, he won. It was. They made it sound like a monumental victory. I guess monumental victories these days are 1 or 2%. So okay, if that's the definition, he did. But to me, it was close. But he shouldn't have even been close. He should not have won based on everything that they said. He should have been lost big time. But I think he won because he kept it personal, kept it local, and kept it to what the Virginians really wanted and needed help on. And it really comes down to that.
Well, all right, Ron, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Bruce, I was channel surfing this morning, too, and that's exactly the same thing I heard. So I think that's spot on. I also heard, and I think this to be true, that a lot of Democrats, including myself, are kind of tired of the infighting within the Democratic with the radical left and you know, trying to push some things that really aren't that popular with a lot of Democrats and almost every single Republican. So that's number one. But I did want to say that I find kind of hilarious how politically you can spin things different ways, because I was watching Fox News, Fox Sunday or whatever it's called. I hardly ever watch Fox, but I was watching it this morning, and Cedric, I forget his name, but the black gentleman, does everybody know I'm talking about Cedric something or other?
Is it Cedric Richmond?
Yes, yes. I think he's like the chief of staff or something. And he was making a great senior advisor. Thank you. I was enthralled with what he was saying, because he kept coming under attack by the Fox anchor, and you know, trying to derail everything that Biden has done so far. But he stood his ground, and he was firm in countering everything that the Fox anchor was saying about, you know, oh, the Democrats are horrible, all this crap is going on. And he made it sound like the opposite is true, you know, that a lot of great things have happened and we're headed in the right direction. So I just find that, and I happen to agree with what he was saying, but I know half of the country doesn't. So I just find that kind of amusing, how, you know, you could look at the same exact events unfolding and either see it as very positive or very negative.
All right. Well,
David, can I add one more thing to that real quick?
Sure.
Okay, I think the reason why this is so monumental, Bruce, is not the margin of victory. It's the fact that, no, there hasn't been a statewide Republican win there in over 20 years, just about. So that's why it's so monumental. It's also should be noted that Republicans not only won the governor and the lieutenant governor, they also won the House and Senate as well. So they're in the majority there as well. So this is more than just a situation where it was a narrow victory. This was huge, and I think it's a major message and a major litmus test for what's about to happen in the midterms.
You know what I'd be curious to find out? I'd be curious to find out if the suburbs of D.C. Voted for the Democratic candidate and Charlottesville and, you know, the college towns, but the rest of Virginia voted for Youngkin. Is that his name? Whatever his name is.
Yeah, Youngkin.
I would imagine that's the case, but I don't know that for a fact.
I have a quick prediction, gentlemen. Go ahead. Vice President Harris, she said, so goes Virginia, will be the bellwether and the major way the rest of things go all the way through 2022 and 2024. My prediction is she's going to start changing her tune real fast and come up with a way to say, well, that's not what I meant. You just watch and see.
All right.
That's my prediction.
Okay.
But?
Well, we got Spencer on. He just came in, but I wanted to ask Spencer, tell us about the Braves. The Atlanta Braves are now the official champs. Tell us about that, Spencer. Because I know I was at the parade a little bit.
Yes, if you want to call that a parade, it was more like a drive-by. But, yeah, after about 25 years, the Atlanta Braves finally captured the World Series title, I think since 1995. It would have been nice to have had it here. It would have been crazy, but it was a great win for Atlanta. They have a real good team without their two best players, actually, that have been out all season. So they have a very good chance of a repeat. And it was nice for them to get some good get-back for the L.A. Dodgers, which beat them after leading 3-1 last year and allowing the comeback. So it was a big win for Atlanta. They needed something, and the city was on fire. But, yeah, they just need to do it better with that parade, because they were doing, like, 50 miles an hour through downtown. I don't know if you actually see the video, see how fast they was just flying by. But, yeah, that's a big win for Atlanta.
All right. Well, you've been listening to The Man's Voice, and we'll be back here again next Sunday at 6 o'clock. With the new time change, everyone, remember to get up and go to work an hour earlier tomorrow. But, okay, guys, we'll talk again next week. Have a great week. And once again,
unless you're retired, you don't have to get up and go to work.
Congratulations again to Don, and we're so glad Soel is doing well. So we'll be back again next week. Everyone, work for that 42-year marriage.
Have a great week, guys. God bless.
Bye.
Stay healthy.
God bless, guys. Have a good one.
You too, sir.